Welcome to our remote podcast edition of First Name Basis, where we chat with special guests, industry leaders, and tribal scale employees to have an authentic but informal conversation on a variety of relevant tech and innovation topics. I'm Iman Fess, product designer here at Tribal Scale, and I'm chatting remotely with Bevan Mohabir, who is our product design manager in our Dubai office. How's it going, Bevan?
It's all good. It's all good. The weather is really hot over here, reaching almost 50 degrees. So we're doing just fine.
Yeah, sounds like all a summer good. In Dubai.
It is a summer in Dubai, yeah.
Give us a little intro about you, who you are, what you do at Tribal Scale, what's the Dubai office like?
Yeah, so, I'm, of course, Bevan Mohabir. I'm the product design manager here at Tribal Scale Dubai. I've been in the region for about 3 years now. Mostly coming from like a consultancy and agency style background. In terms of the team out here in Dubai, you know, we're a pretty small team, but like, you know, we're a close team at the same time. We're working across loads of different projects across banking and this port community system that we're about to talk about today. A lot of us have been on this project for about a year now. I think it started back in May, I would say. And I've been there ever since as their product design lead across their one product.
Awesome. Yeah, so today we kind of just wanted to talk about how we worked together on this project. So I did a 4-month secondment, which is kind of like a work rotation where I got to work with Bevan very closely in the Dubai office with this client that we just mentioned. And it was very interesting. To say the least, we had a lot of challenges, yeah. Successes as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're probably maybe just going to go through maybe like month by month what we experienced.
So our client, we worked with a company called DP World. DP World is a logistics company that's based out in Dubai. And it mainly specializes in cargo logistics, terminal operations, maritime services, and also some free trade zones and things like that. Again, they're one of the biggest companies out here in Dubai, but they have a lot of ports that operate across the world. Our main product was mainly focused around a port community system. And what that essentially is that it handles the end-to-end cargo logistics of pretty much any commodity that you can get access to, whether it's your local supermarket or whether it's through international trade. Just to give you some context, you know, the port community system that we worked on, it essentially allows you to transport coffee beans from a specific region to across the seas, across countries, eventually towards your cup that you eventually drink out of. The product itself was called Mawani, which is ports in Arabic. And essentially what it was, its main goal of the product was to create a seamless process of being able to handle the logistics of products and cargo from end to end. So from supplier all the way down to retailer.
Yeah, it was a really interesting client too, because it's, as Bevan mentioned, it's cargo logistics, but it was on a global scale. So we were, and as designers, our role was designing experiences for a variety of types of users and processes, whether they're internal or external. So it was really interesting to not only be exposed to what that's like, but to also learn that industry. Like for me, it was mm-hmm. first.
Yeah, definitely. I think for both of us, I think really, because, you know, something like cargo and like logistics and things are very traditional in their approach, and it's something that has been around for centuries, you know.
So
it's
like,
yeah.
And there's so much like specific terminology, like there was a huge learning curve in just the terminology and processes, I would say.
Exactly, yeah. And I think the great thing about this product was the fact that, you know, given its legacy of how long it's been around and how things have operated, a lot of services are somewhat disjointed, and it's very rare that you get a product that centralizes all services depending on the port operations. So, you know, one port may operate with, you know, booking, vehicle bookings, loading vessels and as well as dealing with customs, and they are dealt with across three different products, whereas the Mwani platform essentially centralizes that whole process and allows you to operate across your whole terminal with one product.
Yeah. So just imagine like the one hub spot for all the products you could possibly use to do literally anything when it comes to cargo logistics and processes. Yeah. So I think that's a good transition into how we both began into the project. So I can start. When I started the project, so this whole engagement very quickly turned into a design transformation, I would say, because DP is an enterprise. But we were not initially hired for that purpose. We were very project focused in the beginning, and it wasn't until Bevan and I met and started talking about the different opportunities did we realize, okay, well, there's some definite improvements that we can make here, or at least suggest and introduce, which we can get into. So when I started, it was for financing. Specifically, it was a digital product for helping teams pay for the different cargo that was coming in and out of a port. And so it was for a specific financial team. And naturally, we needed to understand what that financing process was like. And then on top of that, we specified it to the Dominican Republic, which was amazing. I got to do a site visit in the DR in Santo Domingo. We met with the Caicedo terminal. We interviewed a bunch of the employees there. We actually went to a port, which was really fun. And yeah, I got to just really understand the current state and just kind of start to figure out what those product requirements are and where the opportunities lay. And very surprisingly, it was a lot of paper-based processes. It was a lot of just writing it down manually in a book and then handing it over. It was a lot of check payments. So naturally, there's a lot of improvement in efficiency in getting global payments done that way by just digitizing it, simply just digitizing a paper-based method. So for me, that was how I basically got introduced to the project. It was a billing project. It was a mobile-specific experience, or we started off mobile first, but naturally we wanted it to be responsive. And a lot of the times when we got to the site visit, we noticed that a lot of, like maybe 80% of the end users, which were the financial teams and the employees, were actually on their computers. So it was actually supposed to be desktop, but our clients were really pushing for it to be mobile as well, because we wanted to basically make it as easy as possible to pay for your bill, which makes sense, right? Like, if we can accept money in any which way, let's make that as seamless as possible. Mm-hmm. So,
and your position, your position at when you were out in DR and obviously doing that site visit and everything, was it around the customer journey that you were most interested in terms of understanding what people were using and how they were using it?
So that's a really good question. I think because I was there as a designer, I couldn't help but dive into into that perspective to understand what is the step-by-step process the actual person is doing. I was there with strategy as well. So product strategy, which was more so about the bigger picture, the vision, the roadmap as well. I think that's probably why they wanted me there to help with that customer journey or analyzing it as well and identify those improvements. But there was a whole lot. So basically our days would start off with the mornings would be sitting in the office interviewing and talking to different teams. And then the afternoons we would go into the actual ports and take a look. So it was a nice mix. We did that. And I flew over to Dubai, and that's when I met Bevan. But Bevan wasn't there for the first week. He was in the UK. So you want to speak about what you were doing in the UK at that time? What project were you on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what's great about what you did in like DR is the fact that, you know, you were there as a representation of design to anticipate that customer journey. And it's so great how organically you were kind of like able to get that information, which is great. I think what was very different from my time in the UK is that my experience was very structured and was very like well thought out, and it had like a plan and a strategy tied to it. So as you mentioned, right? Like, you know, I wasn't there for like the first week or so. A lot of my time was in the UK, and the product, the service that we were working on within the Mawani product was a vehicle booking system. And the general consensus of that is about having containers that have come off a ship that are in the terminal, and they need to be booked to be dropped off to certain locations. So for example, if furniture from IKEA has come from Sweden, right, and it's loaded in the UK, so London Gateway Port, it then has to be dropped off to the warehouse of IKEA across the country. So what happens is that this vehicle booking system allows hauliers, who are the actual end users, to create those bookings across certain time slots. It's a really interesting piece because it does create this somewhat kind of FX style environment where you kind of have to like pick slots quickly. Sometimes when a slot is available, you have to capitalize. And there's a whole strategy behind it as well, which is really interesting.
It was a little different from billing, right? Because there was an existing application that did this already.
Yeah, so here's the other interesting part about it. So the UK ports, there were two UK terminals, London Gateway and Southampton, and they were both using two separate terminals. Now, the benefit that Mawani was going to bring to this whole experience was the fact that we could have a centralized product across two ports and be able to calibrate it depending on their operating systems and things like that. But my time in the UK was mainly about getting some customer feedback from more contextual inquiry. So we set up a strategy to almost understand how a new solution could work and if the similar conventions were still being well received from end users. So the general consensus of the product was that it was split into three columns, in the sense of that you had your list of containers on your left-hand side, you had your list of bookings on your right-hand side, and then you also had like a workspace where you bring containers in and you match them to a time slot and then your booking is created. With that said, we wanted to almost get an understanding of if we were to maintain that approach, but also bring in new conventions, how well would they be received by end users? So we're talking about things like predictive search, the drag and drop functionality of being able to drag containers from one place to another, being able to filter through by time slots and things like that. So there's a lot of new conventions that we wanted to bring to the product to further enhance it. But our goal for that was to validate any of the experiences that we had come up with through the actual product research and things like that.
Learned that that's what you were doing, I was really, I was actually really happy, because that validation process and user testing is not something that's usually done a lot of, especially mm-hmm. in enterprise. And the fact that you were flown out, that you got to go to a different country and actually practice that that testing and gather that information, mm-hmm. that I think that may have been like our first real design transformation practice, is the fact mm-hmm. that you were able to do that user testing.
Yeah, so absolutely.
How did that end up happening? Like how did it get brought up, and how did you sell the concept of testing and getting that feedback?
Yeah. So we had done a lot of research into the two different products, and we anticipated like there was a lot of similarities across what's happening in London Gateway and then also what's happening in Southampton. So there's a lot of overlaps there. What's interesting, when we spoke to subject matter experts and we did those interviews with them, there was almost like a consensus towards trying to get, trying to satisfy as many customers as possible, specifically larger hauliers who have a lot more inventory and are doing bookings, you know, somewhat hundreds of bookings within the space of a couple of hours, as opposed to your smaller hauliers who are only operating with probably a lesser amount of containers. So in order to kind of get that validation, what we wanted to do is create like a spectrum to be like, listen, we don't want to create a really heavy product that doesn't have an effect on the smaller mom pop style hauliers, you know? So we don't want to create a control panel full of features where it's only going to be utilized at 10%. What we want to do is keep it fairly general, get a perspective across other areas, big hauliers, small hauliers, and everybody else in between, to almost get a general consensus to say, is this the expectation that you would expect to have on this VBS product? Also, given our time frame and the way that we want to deliver through Scrum, we had a bit of a struggle given the large quantity of the requirements. So it was almost to kind of get a validation of what's the key drivers to satisfy the MVP of this new centralized product. So in order to do that, it was essentially saying, let's go out there, speak to users, let's understand a bit more about their pain points and almost learn what we don't know just by looking at it from desk research. You know, desk research is always great and you can always get into the granular things. You can always have a lot of discussions about it, but ultimately the true value that came from this project, at least, was the end users who are actually doing this on a day-to-day, especially given the fact that VBS bookings are somewhat a lottery. So if you get one, you're kind of lucky in that given. Also, I would also say that our technical partner in the UK was very impressed about the kind of output and the strategy that we put towards it. And you mentioned a good point there as well, Iman, earlier, like you were saying, you know, it's something that is somewhat unheard of in the logistics industry. And even our technical partner had even said, like, you know, this is the first time that anyone has ever done this for our haulier partners, or at least our terminals and things like that. So it was quite a refreshing thing to hear from technical partners, from those who are coming from a very traditional industry. And, you know, it just shows how things are growing and how we adapted design into a somewhat, corporate style environment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so that is like introducing lean validation. Like, you can sit in a room and come up with a bunch of ideas, which you think, you know what, really solves the problem. But it's not until you actually put that solution in front of the person who's using it day to day to realize, okay, well, actually, out of the 10 solutions you provided, or the 10 new features in the booking system that you've introduced, really filters the only one that's going to help me become more effective at my job. And so why spend all this time and money building all of these features? At least maybe we will in our roadmap get to all of those 10 features, but now we know that filter, and this is just an example, that filter one, that is what we need to prioritize. And it's just it does cost money, it does cost time, it does push timelines behind, which is, I think, some of the reasons why testing is usually not viable for a lot of enterprises, I think. But when you actually get to do it, and to the level of which you did at the UK, I think that really shows the value based on the feedback that you get. So
yeah, absolutely. It gives you somewhat the voice of reason. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, it's not a case of you putting things on screen, mocking a couple of things up based on requirements and saying, this is the way it should be. You're almost learning a lot more about what should be shown. Like, we as creatives will have a general consensus of what we think is relevant, but only when we look at our affinity map diagram and we're like, hey, there's a big pain point for showing an expiration time on our container cards, or there's a really huge area to anticipate. You know, I need to know how much this container is going to cost me if I keep it in the port an extra day, you know? And that you cannot get, especially jumping into the project at the same level that we did. You know, we jumped in, you know, in somewhat like May, and, you know, we were doing this testing in and around August time, you know, September time. Yeah. And that's only a couple of months, you know?
Yeah, in a perfect world, you'd be able to do it more than once. Mm-hmm. But again, that really reflects on the topic of what we want to talk about, is having that structure and process set up in an enterprise to be able to conduct those sessions in a financially viable way. It's not costing you money. It's just the process that we follow. Sometimes we do it, sometimes we don't, depending on the project. But it's not this one-off kind of situation where, like, we'll test this, but we're not going to test anything else that we do. So that's really interesting. And so very quickly, like, I spoke about my project, which was very specific to financing and billing. Yours was about booking trucks and getting the containers out of the ports and delivered. those are just two examples of what Milani was providing to their clients. And those are just two examples of the types of logistics and processes. There's so much more. And then when Bevan finally came back in August, we had already met before because we were in the same company, but this was the first time we were meeting in Dubai. And we kind of just started informing each other about the projects that we were doing. And then Bevan kind of started introducing me to the overall roadmap of what else is Milani trying to accomplish. And there was just four or five other types of products to help digitize other processes. And so when we sat there, we very quickly, and I think it was very obvious to us because we are designers, but we realized, okay, there needs to be consistency in visual language patterns and usability. And that naturally in our eyes turned into a design system. Yeah. So very quickly, our first kind of design transformation was the testing, introduction to testing. But realistically, the more active approach that we took was building a design system and kind of introducing that to the team and getting it built and getting it out and having it applied to the products that were getting built right now or getting built in the future. And that in itself was difficult, but rewarding. What would you say? That's a good
summary
of how that went.
What I would say is that, you know, it's something that was introduced that was unheard of. And I don't think that this was the scale that was expected given our remit. So I think one thing that happened, which I think is really great, you know, kind of a blessing in disguise, is the fact that you were working in one area on one product. And then I was working in another area with another product. And we came together as a result being in Dubai and was like, actually, there is a design process here. There's a lot happening here. There's a lot of good things that we can learn from each project. Having said that, to your point, yeah, there was a question that was raised in the sense that, you know, we're doing some great work with the Calcedo team. We're doing some great work with the UK ports. And there's a lot of similarities in terms of the layouts and the kind of language that we're using for design. But with that said, Milani has up to 7 different types of services and we're only tackling about 2. So how do we create that consensus across all 7? So essentially that's when we put our heads together and we were kind of like saying, well, isn't that what a design system is?
Yeah, I think it was like really obvious to us. I think what was surprising to me was the fact that we had to really explain what a system is. And this is our fault of assuming that people know what design systems are. So maybe we should speak really quickly about what is a design system.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the design system that we had, at least how we've defined it in DP World, is a way of saying, you know, it's a single source of truth, allowing you to create consistency across your product that you may be building. So where you have specific use cases, which are so unique, depending on, you know, business goals, requirements and all these kind of things, at least with a design system, you can create a centralized space whereby the experience of a certain feature won't hinder in different areas of the product. So what it does is that it does create, not only create that consistency across connected products, but also acts as a source of truth for product managers, for designers, for engineers to almost get an understanding of how does a function work or how does a pattern work? How should the pattern look and how should we build it respectively? And that's really how I think the real kind of question came in is like, you know, if we start doing all this work for Calcedo and the UK ports, how do we do this for our implementations in India? How do we do this for any new implementations that may come out in Turkey? And that's what the design system was really there for. And I think it was driving that conversation of bringing product owners and engineers involved and by saying, you know, this is not just a UI kit. You know, this isn't just a set of components and buttons and inputs. While it includes those things, it also includes rules, business logic, you know, integration points and all these kind of things.
The way we sold it was like, all right, it's going to help your engineers because it's going to have code attached to it. So every time we show you a new design, you know, you don't have to hard code it every time. because you can leverage the design system. Every time requirements come in, we as designers, it'll help us because we have set best practices and patterns that we have validated and proven work, and people will not be confused or necessarily as confused on how to navigate these elements on a page. So we really had to take each role. This is how it's going to help the client. This is how it's going to help engineers. This is how it's going to help PMs. This is how it's going to help designers. And I think that was a really nice strategy that we used to kind of show the value on how it's going to help everyone in the working team. And then naturally, as a result of that, the quality of the product will improve as well.
Yeah,
I think I think honestly, that was fine. I don't think that was really hard to get everyone on board. I think the concept was great, but when it got to actually setting it up, right? Like paying for the subscriptions of the tools, putting it all together, documenting it, getting the engineers to start coding specific, like adding to that software. Mm-hmm. I think that is when we started facing some obstacles on how to actually get it through the door. But I think the buy-in was there. Once we explained the ideal world and how a design system works, everyone was like, all right, we need to pursue this. And so we kind of just added a lot more work onto our plate, but I personally enjoyed it. I think both of us were like, this is just so obvious to us that this is what needs to be done next. And we need to work on it. And so I think that was the second leg of transformation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think one of the things that a design system did for us, as at least as designers, is that it brings forward that attention to detail far beyond what you would ever consider. It's very common that sometimes, you know, we put things together and, you know, as much as we like to define pixel perfect and things like that, like the pixel perfect is definitely something that we should own as designers, but at least the design system gives you that consensus of like, you know, creating consistency across different things. So if you are building cards, or if you're building forms, you know, you have a guideline and you have a baseline to almost like leverage from every single time. And it takes away that that pixel perfect anxiety, if you want to call it that. It's definitely like saying, right, well, I know for a fact that this input is spaced equally, and I don't need to worry about it. I can just place it into my design and then happy days. I think where the real value came from the client side in regards to that design system and showcasing that design is less of just like, you know, just getting some screens done or anything else like that. It's more of saying, you know, this acts as an onboarding for any new designer that comes on board. So anybody who starts this project, who's just like us, who's just, you know, entered the logistics world for the first time, they can get a baseline of the quality that the designs need to come out at by leveraging this design system. And that's what we found, at least, you know, when we were introducing new designers onto the project. We had like a lot of designers across the different services. And of course, like, you know, the requirements were different and, you know, the business logic was different and the use cases were different. But having said that, what kept us all close together as a design guild was the fact that we had this design system at our focal point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really good introduction to the other element of design transformation that we brought in, which was our process. So you mentioned other designers. So we were not the only designers, obviously. We had a super talented team of designers with us that were working remotely in India. And so we were chatting with them every day. Everything that we did was in collaboration with those guys. They were super, super talented. Their skills were really strong. So whenever we would kind of introduce a topic or introduce a new requirement, like we knew that we had the support of that team, which was really nice. But I think like one thing that I did notice coming in was, and Bevan, you touched on it really lightly, was the fact that, you know, in a lot of places, teams believe that design is really just creating screens. Mm-hmm. And that's not wrong. I don't think that's a wrong perspective. I just think that that's just the tip of the iceberg. And there's a lot more that design can offer if you allow your design teams to work together. And I think in a lot of places, designers are not allowed to work together. So when we, I mean, the second you and I met, we were like, okay, design system, testing, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And when we started collaborating with the team in India, I felt like they were also really happy to just have a space to discuss design, discuss our process, rationalize the decisions we're making, and make sure that we are putting forward the best solutions that we believe are feasible and viable. So, so you want to touch on, we had to speak the company's language. So we sat in a room and we just brainstormed this process. We wrote it all out, and then we translated it into Jira tasks, because that's how everyone was working. Everyone was speaking Jira language. And so I think that's how we kind of infiltrated the working process of DP.
Yeah. So the it's interesting you say that, yeah, because, you know, Jira was like, you know, the focal point of the organization, I would say. Is like, you know, if it's not in Jira, then it doesn't exist. And it was very much a source of truth there. But you know, there was an opportunity there, at least that came from yourself, you know, Iman, and something that you said about, you know, how are we going to create like a centralized space for anyone to come in and be like, right, how is design doing today? You know, the whole purpose of these sprints, or at least this team sprints that was happening, is like, you know, saying, what is each team or each implementation currently working on? So, you know, the DR trade implementation, you know, where, you know, what are they working on? What areas are they focusing on? And then how is that different from like other sprints, you know, and things like that. So I think the whole purpose of having that Jira task centralized space was about having a holistic view of where design is currently today. What are our touch points? You mentioned a really cool part about the culture, at least that we tried to bring as a part of this process. And it's not a case of just, you know, saying, you know, here's a couple of things to do and I need you to do it by end of day. It was almost like saying, you know, we created like this environment of having like design briefs. I think one thing that we as creatives always love to receive is a fairly well-defined brief. And it's always something that we try to create this sense of ownership across the team. So if you are on a certain stream or working on a specific area of the product, you know, and you get a design request, it would make sense for you to scope out what that request would be. And that comes in the form of a brief. And that brief is, what is the problem? What are you trying to solve? What do we currently know? And, you know, do we need to validate anything as we go? That's the general consensus of what a brief was. And then we would progressively turn that into a Jira task or a Jira card. And it would be placed in the Kanban board to be like, okay, this designer is working on it at this time. This is the brief that they're trying to tackle. And anything that they would come out with, or even ourselves, anytime we would research something, anytime we would, you know, do a whiteboarding session with post-its on the wall, we would take pictures and attach it to that card. So that card progressively goes through the Kanban and it's your centralized area for a specific feature. In regards to that Kanban and how things were, you know, there was always a time in our sprints, or at least our 2-week sprints, to kind of say, right, this is our critiquing mode. You know, we have like maybe about 1 hour to 2 hours or so that we're going to look at everything in the critique column of the Kanban and say, right, whoever's running this ticket, present it to us and we'll give us your design feedback. This was very much, again, to kind of create that communication, especially with an offshore team, but then also give this sense of ownership of saying, like, you know, it's not a case of having a checkbox of things that you need to put on a screen. It's like, listen, understand the problem you're trying to solve, take full ownership and get a full perspective of the customer that you're working with, and, you know, be able to design for that customer, or at least that persona, or whoever it may be.
Yeah. The last thing we wanted was for that design team to feel like we were just coming in and kind of giving them instructions on what to do. We wanted them to feel like we get what it's like to have to make like 50 iterations on one design. We really wanted to show them that we are also designers and we understand the pain points that you have. And so let's collectively collaborate on a process together where you feel comfortable and I feel comfortable and we can focus on the work and actually truly create the best design solution and kind of debate with each other. I think this layout is better or that practice is better. and really kind of just feel confident in what we have. And I think that really gave us a unified front because we were able to rationalize our decisions, which I think every designer has that ability to do it. It's just, or has the capability of doing it, but it's not always set up to do that depending on work culture, the type of company you're in, the type of teams that you're set up with in. And it's a lot harder for a designer to be able to do that if they're working amongst themselves. So getting that kind of collaborative spirit of being like, all right, we're here to figure it out. Like, we on several occasions would ask, does this process make sense to you? Because we wanted to make sure that once, especially me, because I knew I was leaving after 4 months, right? Because I had to come back to Canada. So I knew that I don't want to introduce something that's not going to be adopted. So just like we're designing products for people with financing or people who are trying to book a truck, we are also designing a process for these designers and for this team. And it wasn't just designers. We were also talking to engineers. We were also talking to PMs to be like, what is the best way for everyone here to do that kind of critique, to go through a rationale properly, to be able to do some creative exploration instead of just meet a deadline and hand out those iterations.
Yeah. So there was like a case of, absolutely, yeah. There was a case of having the design critiques where we're looking at it from a visual perspective and obviously the usability perspective, understanding whether it satisfies the primary use case of what you're trying to create. Having said that, also making sure that it's aligning to the rules of the design system. But what's interesting is that, you know, there was another area where once that was complete is that you bring it forward to a PM and an engineer and you kind of say, right, does this satisfy your product requirements? Mm-hmm. Does it satisfy the technical validation? Do you know what I mean? So, you know, some of the things that we may critique and feel like is a great idea may not be satisfied in the product because of the way that the architecture is set up. Mm-hmm. So I think this whole process as a design, at least a design process for through Jira Tasks, at least, was very much a consensus of, you know, having a routine of how we actually get stuff done, not to mention give a holistic picture to the senior stakeholders to say, this is what design is working on right now. Also gave a sense of ownership across the designers, and especially the case of saying, you know, we're all working on the same product here, just through different services, and they all do different things. But what it does, it acts as a knowledge center for all of us to understand about some of the use cases in other areas. So, you know, to go back to our projects, Iman, like, you know, we were working on a finance product about containers in a yard. And then also I'm working on a product where those same containers are getting picked up. Now I'm starting to learn that the more containers that are left in the yard, they get charged through your service. So my product has to be able to trap efficiently the amount of bookings that you can do in one go. So if there is a connection across the whole thing, and that's the beauty of the product. But I think these kind of environments with design and with your product owners and with your engineers and everything just created that consensus of you fully owning the product, you know, regardless of what remit that you're in.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to touch on the concept of a design PM, because that was a joke between us throughout this process. So as I said, like, we were already working on our own projects. Bevan had BBS, the booking system. I had the billing. Then we talked about design system. We're like, okay, cool. So now we have to put that on our plate as well. And then just because we were both so motivated to make things better and show design transformation, we came up with this Jira process. And as Bevan mentioned, it was a lot of, you know, writing stories, tracking stories, adding it, collaborating, keeping everything up to date. So that was an additional workload as well. So now we have our own projects. We have the collaborative design system in which we are working with everyone, but Bevan and I were leading. And then we had this new introduction of this brand new Jira task process. And all of a sudden, our days were very short because we just had so much going on. And I think that is when we realized that, you know, one person cannot do everything. And that is a true importance of design leadership, is to take on the ability to implement these things without having to do the the hard skill work of itself, because we were still doing, you know, critiques with everybody. We were still focusing on our own projects. We were still getting iterations done, talking to, like, having all these different meetings on so many different things. And it was really a challenge. It was really struggling. And I noticed specifically that we were starting to lose a little bit of trust from our client when we put way too much on our plate.
Yeah. And I think we, as designers in general, you know, or at least creators, we want to help. You know, that's, it's in our nature to want to help and want to give the best value as much as we can. I think where leaders have like the best balance is to be able to maintain order across what's happening, but also not afraid to get stuck in and start running a critique or putting some screens together or doing some ideation or whatever it may be. And I think that's one of the lessons learned, I think, for probably both of us, is at least, you know, trying to create that fine tune or that fine balance across whether things are actually getting delivered and whether we're actually giving them enough support as much as we could. Because like you said, this design PM is very much, in a single sentence, is trying to deliver design through Scrum. So mm-hmm. we had our own planning, we had our own refinements, we had our own critiques and retros, we had our own you know, planning amongst other PMs, and it was really interesting because we had a lot of doubts.
Like, maybe design doesn't fall into Scrum.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's such an interesting thing, because it's like, you know, mm-hmm. we were trying to align ourselves across a very crazy looking graph of other PMs in terms of their status of their projects. So, you know, one PM is coming to us saying, "Listen, I need 10 design tickets," and then another one is saying, "Listen, I need like 5," but the reason why the person who needs 5 is gonna release their product, you know, by the end of the year, whereas the other one is gonna be the end of next year. So there's trying to create that fine balance of making sure that we are still delivering, but then also being that support network to the whole rest of the team. That's where the real challenge was, and I feel like as a lesson learned is that, you know, we should have been a little bit more clear, or at least given a more sense of like a more holistic approach towards having a process, or at least a documented process, rather than go through the traditional Scrum based methodology. Mm. Because as you said, it only made us lose confidence from our client to some
reason. Yeah, I think like we were definitely understaffed with the amount of type of work that we wanted to do. We were not hired to any of this, but we, being part of that environment, being in the work, we couldn't help but kind of pitch these improvements. And then we had that's the one thing I really liked about my time in Dubai, is that we would pitch the solution and be like, "Listen, this is a good way of working." And our client and our team was like, "All right, go for it, do it." And that's when Ben and I were like, okay, we got to do this. We got to make it work. That kind of autonomy is not always given in a lot of companies. So I think we learned a lot, and maybe, you know what, maybe Scrum and design don't match. Maybe they do. This was just our first go at it. I still think that there is potential in it. I think there's some improvements that we could have done if I was still there, we could have been working more on into it. But I also don't think that that's the only way to be tracking design work. And there are other ways to do it, but the real challenge is, how does it fit into existing working environments? Because we don't want to introduce some, and that's a huge thing with digital transformation, at least in the design's role or internal processes, is like, we don't want to introduce this brand new way of working and completely ditch the old way. It needs to be, and if that is the case, then it needs to be a seamless transition. Because at the end of the day, we don't want the work to suffer. We still got deadlines. We still have products to release. Yeah, so I think that was, I mean, we can talk about that forever, but for the sake of time, I do want to really quickly touch on the workshops. So the last element that we kind of pushed forward for design transformation was introducing design thinking workshops. So we got this concept of a system, we got this concept of testing, validating our ideas and our solutions. We put in this structure and process in Jira for a process of design where we can talk to each other, collaborate, iterate efficiently. One thing that we did notice was that requirements were constantly changing. 1 week we would have a clear picture of this is what we're trying to achieve, and then the next week it would change. And we didn't have the transparency to know why. Not because we weren't told. As soon as we asked, we were told, but it just wasn't something that we knew was coming. We could have anticipated it, but we never really knew why is the strategy changing? Why is something prioritized or deprioritized? And that's when we proposed design thinking workshops, which was really this design thinking methodology of getting, you know, we were already kind of doing that. We were already bringing collaboration between strategy, engineering, and design with the system, with the process, with the testing. The only element that we were not bringing all three disciplines together was product requirements and strategy. And so we ran a week-long workshop on a new product, because there was no shortage of products that were coming or services for Mewani, and that was basically registering new clients. And we ran through these workshops. I think for the sake of time, we probably won't be able to get into that too much, but I do think that we showed the value in kind of getting designers and engineers as involved in strategy from the get-go, so that they kind of understand what's the goal when they dive into creating the solution, changing up the infrastructure, what is a restriction, what isn't, what boundaries can be pushed, what can't be pushed, and just what's that final goal of what we are trying to achieve with our product.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, given its complexity, I know that we don't have that much time, but at least like, as we talked about, like, you know, like, as we know as well, like, you know, the product has like 7 to 8 services and has like multiple use cases across, and you can only imagine how many people, or at least the specific layers of people that would register to this product itself, and what access rights you have, and what you have exposure to, and how you onboard yourself is a really critical part. And it's so, I think one of the things we found really difficult is the sense of that, you know, there's so many requirements, and there's almost so many things. So it's like, how do we create like a, how do we like find out what's the most important and what's the most valuable based on what we know as the current user types, and what are the key areas that people are tend to have an issue with in the current implementation? And I think you did that really, I think we did that together like really well in terms of identifying what the real goals were of what people are trying to do in terms of this onboarding, identifying those key user groups, and then understanding what the pain points are from the current customer journey.
Identifying those user groups was a headache. It was so hard because it was, there were just so many, because we were working off of an existing state. They already had a registration process in mind, but there were so many band-aid solutions where we literally used an entire wall of post-its to figure out, okay, I have 13 different types of users, but realistically there's actually just 3. And then these are all type A's. There's different types of type A's, but you're still a type A user, or you're a type, so like you would be like a IT user or an actual client or a manager versus an employee. And you can have different types of managers with, and really that just meant that you would have different rights. I, as the boss of everybody, have the rights for everyone, but realistically I'm not going to be doing anything because I'm the boss and I have more important meetings. I'm not going to be on the software managing my employees. Somebody else is going to be doing that. And so they may have more rights on that software. So that was a huge element. But I think also the part of design thinking which we introduced was that the reason a lot of stuff is prioritized is not always just a feasible goal and a viable goal. Like, yeah, this is going to make us money, and yes, we're able to build it. But we introduced that third element of like, yes, people are actually going to use it as well. So our main goal by doing these workshops was to just show that the way we put these requirements together should address business goals, feasibility, capabilities, and then actual user needs. Like, let's not solve for something that people just don't have an issue with. If this works, then let's not solve for that. Let's not improve on it right now. We can improve on it later. Let's focus on the key element of why people are not registering. What is stopping users from completing their registration? Let's target that. And I think that was really successful. We got a lot of positive feedback on those workshops. Mm-hmm. It's, again, something that is difficult to run for each product. Since there were so many services and products, we managed to do it for one. again, it's not also something that you just do at once, kind of like testing. It's something that you want to keep alive and also evolve. It doesn't have to follow the same structure every time. But that goes back to, you know, having that kind of design process and structure in. So I think like all four elements, that's how we, I believe we introduced design strategy and design's role in digital transformation. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot. I had so much fun. And I think Bevan and I kind of got like adrenaline rushes from getting the go ahead to do so much that we kind of got burnt out really quickly. And we had to like slow down a little bit and really, we're like, okay, we can't do everything. Let's focus on some things and do it well. I had so much fun working in Dubai with you. Like it was super, super rewarding.
I think if we look at the scale of what we accomplished is the fact that, you know, we had a design team of like one person walk into that product and kind of say, right, you know, this is, you know, we need to tackle one service issue. And then it just as our nature, as Travel School designers, you know, our nature is to like, right, you know, if I'm going to understand something, the best way I'm going to understand is with Sharpies and Post-its. And then you cover the wall with Post-its, and then, you know, the client comes in and they're like, what have you done to our walls? Kind of thing. And it's like, well, actually, I've designed for you. You know, this is my design thinking.
This is real. This is work.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm, you know, and I think what we accomplish as a result is that, you know, as I said, there's one person working on it and on the design and seeing the value. We managed to scale that towards a team of 10 people across multiple services, demonstrating design thinking, and through this structured design process that is still currently there. Like I'm still on the project, I'm still there, you know, it's still operating. It still has, you know, areas where it does need a little bit more of a hands-on approach, but it is all there and the ownership is only getting stronger. So you're getting, you know, it used to be a consensus of us, you know, hosting the critiques every Wednesday. Now it's a case of, you know, PM saying, listen, I want to have critiques with them, other PMs. I want to have this. I want to have that. They're learning a lot from us. I think they were very much used to, you know, the client in themselves were very much used to, were already doing these kind of things in terms of, you know, gathering requirements, understanding business logic, making sure that it's satisfying the business goals in terms of, you know, finance and all these kind of things, while also combining it with user-centric cases. Having said that, I think the format that we brought it forward was a refreshing way of doing so. Mm-hmm. And it's only enhanced. It's only enhanced other projects and other streams that we've worked on this product. You know, it's, you know, now it's a common consensus of saying, you know, which requirements satisfy the design system today and what can I pull? Basically, how is my product 45% complete without actually having coded anything yet?
Yeah.
And that's such a refreshing way to bring that forward. And, you know, yeah, like I've totally enjoyed my time working with you, at least to get that from, to build its momentum. Of course, me walking in as designer number one, of course, has its own kind of viewpoint on it all. But I think where it built its momentum in terms of the process, the design thinking, that human-centered design approach, is when you came on board and was very much like, okay, how are we going to scale this? How are we going to make this big? You know, and
It just shows from my experience working with you and even with other designers, it's like we can accomplish so much more when we get to pair. And I think pair designing is something that is overlooked a lot, but we saw the value that we brought just by working together. And we had a lot of debates. There were like some heated discussions that we had with each other where we were like, no, this is the right way. No, this is the right way. But it's just because we were just so passionate about how to do something. And I really enjoyed that. I never took offense to you not agreeing with me or anything like that. I think that is where the magic happened with us kind of butting heads and then solving and being like, okay, this is how we're going to go forward. And, you know, just being able to bounce ideas off of each other, like it was really fun. And I hope that that's the case for a lot of design teams moving forward. I hope like more companies can see the value of allowing designers to work with each other.
Mm-hmm. I think we were very blessed with the idea that, you know, there was almost like we were building a design practice from the ground up. Yeah, and you've got a lot of like companies that we all know that obviously do, you know, have created their famous design processes and structures, you know, from the very start, and you've seen the value as a result. Like, you know, the companies that we talk about all the time when we talk about Uber, Airbnb, you know, Atlassian and all this kind of stuff, like these guys have put design as their focal point. And that's one of the blessings in this whole engagement that we had, you know, on this, is that, you know, we were able to start from nothing and create something into something that's, you know, fully functional. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think so too. Like, you know, we learn a lot as well about how difficult it is, and we can only give kudos to those who have done it as well, because it's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding. Yeah. Yeah,
for the sake of time, so we did. We have a couple questions from our colleagues at Tribal Scale, because we told them we're doing this podcast. So are there any things that you wanted to ask us? So we probably only have time for maybe one or two. So let's read one. Tips and thoughts on convincing the rest of the organization on the importance of design. I feel like we kind of touched that, but
yeah,
we have to summarize.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to that old Tribal Scale statement, in that, you know, you learn by doing and you fail fast, right? And I think that's something that you can only go, I think with design, it's always something that you kind of have to showcase and bring it forward to the table and then have that discussion, you know, after. Yeah. And see the value, and like, you know, and I think it's about being that, having that ability to educate on why it's valuable, as opposed to saying this is what you need. A lot of the times we feel very warranted to almost say, like, you know, this is the thing that you need, and I've thought about it so much and everything else. But, you know, what I think is a key part is, like, you know, being able to understand who you're talking to and being able to educate with respect to the work that you've done. And then eventually, once they've learned from you, the work speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. You know? So whether you're speaking to a PM or you're speaking to, you know, the CTO or even the CEO, you know, the fact is that, you know, your audience is your user, right? So you need to anticipate what your user is going to receive, you know, what they, and how do you educate them, whether it's at a high level or a detailed level. Once they've captured that education, only then the work will speak for itself, and that's how it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not an easy process, but it's definitely something that
not easy.
No,
I think, like, so the rest of the question is convincing the rest of the organization. So if it's specific to design transformation, so let's talk specifically with enterprise design transformation, how is design doing it? How is it going to contribute to digital transformation? We mentioned earlier that, you know, one of the very valuable things was to be able to jump into critiques, but then also go into meetings and give presentations and spread that education on design process, system, tools, etc. And having that balance is really important, but I do think having accountability on certain elements and accountability on certain responsibilities and having a clear breakdown of who's responsible of what can really help. I think design leadership is a huge hole that we had. Like, we were the most senior designers there. I think if we had someone who is kind of helping spread that message, because we not only had to do the education part, but we also had to be hands-on in meetings and getting all of that stuff, all those iterations and all, having all of those conversations. I think that was one of the elements that was just a lot on our plate. So if we had, you know, just more people who were able to kind of take on certain presentations for us to help kind of spread the information, just show that accountability, I think goes a long way. But it has to be a balance between doing that education, but then also getting the work done and showing it in practice. And there has to be, both of those elements have to be working together. Otherwise, I just don't see it working. I don't see any enterprise adopting new processes, new tools, justifying money to buy, you know, pay for new employees or buy new tools to get this kind of stuff done, unless they see it providing value like within a quarter or within like a few months or within your next product release. So as much as we, you know, we can come in and kind of just give presentations and educate, we do have to have the element of delivering as well. I'm pretty sure that's true for other disciplines as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why it's not easy, right?
Yeah, the proof is in the pudding, as they say, you know.
Okay, we'll do one more question.
Yep.
What is the biggest challenge when trying to implement new practices in a large company like DP? What was the best, easiest, most fulfilling part? Again, I feel like we've answered, but in summary, I think for me, fulfilling was watching more of the different disciplines talk to each other, seeing designers and engineers talk with each other, PMs and designers getting more involved with each other. And really the most rewarding thing was our design team and like the critiques that we had together, watching the team in India become more and more articulate with their rationales and their decisions and their designs. That was that was really cool. I got schooled a couple times. I was like, why did you do XYZ? And they're like, well, let me tell you, I did it because XYZ. And I was like, okay, all right. You put me in my place. You're totally right. So I was like really impressed by that.
Yeah, that is only getting stronger, by the way, just so you know, the more and more I'm calling things out, you know, as much as I don't understand a certain use case, like they're calling it out, they're educating, they're giving me that consensus. And
that's great.
By the end of critiques, I already know them. So I would agree to that. I would say, yeah, that's like the best thing that's come out of it is just, of course, having other designers come out and being like giving that sense of ownership as opposed to saying, okay, what do you need me to do next? It's like, you know, what I found is that, you know, when I was pairing with another designer, was the fact that, you know, I was almost facilitating the idea of like, you know, once we do this, then we move on to the next couple of features on the next couple of areas. And it was almost like a given. It was almost like, yeah, like, you know, once I've done those, then I need to move on to the next section. And it's like, rather than saying like, okay, what do I do next? What do I do next? What do I do next? And, you know, even got to a point where when we're like, you know, really deep into another area and it's like, yeah, but if we change it in this place, we have to change it in something that we did last week. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes you're just like, when you're across all these different kind of products and all these different things, you're kind of just like, oh yeah. And it also affects things in six other places as well. So you're kind of just like, okay, let's validate this. Let's take this up as a further conversation. So I agree with you absolutely.
I would say like we're so knowledgeable now on cargo logistics. Like I feel like I know so much about the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think thank you, Bevan, for joining us. I had so much fun working with you in Dubai and reminiscing through this chat. This has been First Name Basis Remote Edition. Thank you everyone for listening. You can check out this podcast and more episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on your YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn.